like to share a few thoughts and ruminations and reflections on what I'm calling today labeling and beyond, or preliminary reflections on dealing with emotional suffering, which in some ways, well, hopefully follows on from one of the readings that we had from Jacob Beck on the cocoon of pain. The last reflection that I offered a couple of months ago was focused around a very difficult decision that I had to make in finding a residential care facility for my wife. And today's talk follows on, in a sense, as a bit of a fallout of that decision, as we're still settling into it in some ways, and trying to relate my Zen practice to those very changed circumstances in my life. That was very much a work in progress, and as I was thinking of that, I thought, well, life is very much a work in progress too, so no apologies for things that may change as a result of life being changed. So this past week, I was confronted with the sudden departure of someone whom, in that care facility, I really trusted, who was very, very much instrumental in our deciding that this was a place that was going to work out for us. And I was quite shocked, he left very suddenly with really no explanation. I had a quick chat with him, luckily, but it certainly took me by surprise, and I almost would have missed it. And it left me feeling quite helpless, that someone I'd been counting on had been terribly helpful, and I guess a bit frightened about the future. What's this going to be, this institution, without this guy whom I saw as sort of the heart and soul of the institution, not so much for his technical expertise, but just heart and mind, really, just a wonderfully compassionate person. So, of course, my first thought, which is the kind of thing that Joko was talking about, well, what am I going to do about it? I'm going to write a letter. I'm going to complain to the executive director. I'm going to ring up headquarters. You know, all these plans. I think the only thing, luckily, that I did do was talk to the guy who was leaving and express my gratitude for what he... But it left me quite shaken, I noticed, when I was sitting, more so than I think I've ever felt that way before. So it was time to, you know, take a look at my practice. I found I would, going back to the basics of breathing, I normally start with some sort of breath awareness anyway, just to sort of settle me into the cushion. And then begin, as is often suggested, to label the thoughts and feelings that were coming up, not trying to change anything. And I could feel the label and fear arising because of the future, feeling of disempowerment over care arrangements. It's very, very uncomfortable, and feeling, yeah, I think frightened probably was the overarching one. And I, in becoming aware of my bodily sensations, I was aware there was sort of a catch in my throat, kind of frog in my throat way down at the bottom, and a tension in my stomach, and a slight feeling of nausea when I was sitting there, very uncomfortable feelings. So I thought I was curious about going back into the practice and, in a sense, reconstructing from the beginning and seeing where I was and what might be changed. Now, this poses something very interesting, of course. Don't know if it jumps out at me. It took me a long time. There is this contradiction. My practice is not about changing anything. I keep preaching about that. And yet I wanted to change something. There's no question about that. You know, to improve. Are there other ways? I was curious about that. And that is, I guess that is the dilemma that we often face in Zen. And we have to be very careful to avoid that trap. So I hope this became a kind of adventure and curiosity more than I'm going to fix it. I can't write a letter, so I'm going to change my whole practice or something like that. But just to try to deepen my practice, I guess, and went back a little bit to the to our teachers and our teachers of teachers see what I might learn. So, of course, the basic thing is the first noble truth, that we can't avoid suffering. Life is about suffering. And Barry Maggi says something very interesting about that. He says, suffering is also life. So we can turn that around. We're not going to, the two are, intertwined. So we know that our practices, rather than trying to avoid or change this suffering, this unavoidable suffering, this condition of life, to make peace with it somehow by being present with it rather than fighting it and go away because it's unpleasant. And we'll never get anywhere, as Joko was saying in that reading that we did today. Ezra Beda, who's one of Joko's students, same generation as Jeff Dawson in America, reminds that he writes, basically, the suffering may be seen as a reaction to things being different from what we want. And our usual response is, as we were just saying, to try to get rid of it, get away. And his advice, the standard advice, I think, is to reside in our suffering by staying just where we don't want to be. Recently, Jeff, in a talk that he gave in Sydney on broader matters than this, said something that's really stuck in my mind, that life is not a problem to be solved, but a mystery to be experienced. So the emphasis is on the experience of whatever life is throwing up at us, which does often entail suffering. Another of Jeff's generation of students of Joko, Barry Maggi, wrote something that really caught my attention. I haven't read much of his stuff before. He talked about Joko's contribution to Zen in America. And he writes that Joko felt her own traditional Zen training had taught her to treat emotions as an obstacle to practice. She tried to counterbalance this tendency by making emotion instead the object of the practice, so not run away with it, but to be with it. Traditionally, staying with physical pain was the paradigm of non-avoidance, so that the traditional training, particularly from the Japanese tradition, almost that sort of samurai rinzai, we're going to tough it out, we're going to make peace with our body, which is aching because, you know, our knees hurt and our back hurts or whatever it is. So that what became for her the goal was to sit with the whole range of physical sensations, to sit still with all the feelings that we don't usually want to feel and sit still with. Now, Joko, as far as I can understand, and Barry Maggi too, and maybe other teachers, locate the source of our suffering in our early lives. It tends to be a somewhat psychological approach, and Barry Maggi is a psychologist. So this is an area that he points out was completely neglected by traditional Japanese teachers. And he raises a very interesting question. I'm sure many of you know about some of the abuses that otherwise very insightful Zen teachers have visited on their students. And he speculates that perhaps that not enough attention was paid to how we grew up and what our, I find that actually a very, very interesting thing to explore. Because of the ambivalence that I feel toward people whose, let's say, books that I've read and say, aha, yeah, this is really, and have obviously been terrific teachers, but at the same time have been guilty of some pretty horrendous things that have come out, not unlike what's happened to with clergy and Catholic Church or other church groups. And Joko goes even farther in her, particularly in the new book, Now the Ordinary Wonder, and points to what she sees as a single cause, arguing that our suffering results from strategies that we put into place to deal with the kind of existential helplessness of infancy, of being a young child, of a world that we can't control. We come out of the uterus where everything is done for us, in a sense. And at an early age, we realize that, you know, we have got to fit into a world we can't control, and we often feel inadequate to do so. People are telling us to do that. No, don't do that. Don't go near the fire, you know, something, whatever it is. And she goes on to say that we invent strategies for ourselves to cope with our helplessness, in a sense, which always are negative strategies, he says, and essentially are variations of I'm not good enough. So this is a very far-reaching explanation of our kind of psychological and spiritual suffering. But it seems to me, valid as that may be, there are also external causes of suffering, ranging from, you know, our physical condition or any medical conditions we have, to institutional or personal abuse, and of course that we see not outright warfare, the violence, all sorts of things which may trigger things within us, but they are external to us. And we need to tailor our responses to the kind of suffering that we have. And that may account for seeking medical advice if the suffering is a physical suffering. And there's a very interesting account in a book by Susan Moon from the, just called This Is Getting Old, I think, about essentially her own depression, which lasted over several years, in which she talks about Zen as a help and a hindrance to dealing with it, which was finally dealt with through a combination of medical help and her own practice. Or in case of political suffering, or suffering that brought about for political or social events, to bear witness somehow, something we talked about in our Paramitas discussion group a while ago, to take wise action, if that's what we believe will help in the suffering. So this is very broad and has taken me back to a full circle, back to my cushion. Okay, what do I do? I mean, that's fine. It's really fascinating to read what people wiser than I have written about these things, and causes me to think through life. And what I found is, I'm going back to my breathing, I'm going back to my labeling, and from that, noticing the bodily sensations that occur with these, what we might call negative thoughts that are arising. And as much as possible, stay with that tension in the throat and the stomach and the nausea. It's not comfortable. So, and in a sense, it's not thinking about it. It's no longer labeling it. It is being nauseous. And what I'm finding just beginning to happen is that being with those sensations reduces the kind of mental, the mind chatter that's going on, which is part of the labeling about how I'm going to fix things or how uncomfortable I am. And it loosens my attachment to that piling on. What happens is we pile on thoughts and emotions on top of whatever the situation is and the sensations are. And that by being really present, being nauseous, just being nauseous, loosens our attachment to that very help. It's not that labeling is bad, but there's a way of maybe going beyond, using that as a way of going beyond, as a way of just sitting with whatever it is that is causing the suffering.